This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Laurie. Nice morning. It's, of course, every morning's nice when you get to be our age and you actually show up for work, you know?
That's not bad.
Okay, friends and neighbors, good Lord, this new format that Laurie has suggested to me, I'm enjoying it, but it certainly has increased my workload to try to get ready for the show, really, I think.
Because I requested a weekly news review?
Yes, I get it, okay. I might just have to go back to my thoughts on the news.
We do want your thoughts on the news.
Okay. Well,
absolutely.
Actually, these are my thoughts.
Yes.
I just have to dig into things a little bit more. Okay, so here we are, and I mean, we have had a full week of big news. And, I mean, rather than repeating all the things I'm going to talk about, let me just get into it, okay? And we'll just catch it sequentially, and it'll work itself out. Okay, so let's start at the top.
Okay.
I mean, and here again, this is my interpretation of what the top, news stories were, okay? I chose the Biden-McCarthy meeting at the beginning of the week, or whenever the day it was, okay? As an important, piece of news. Why is that? Because these two have fooled around all spring. Now it's close to summer, and it's close to the debt ceiling, limit. It's going to, according to what they say, June 1st. Now, I know that there are people who say, well, we've got plenty of money coming in. We can still pay our debts. Regardless of whether that's true or not, we seem to be fixed on June 1st. Okay, so that's the magic date. And the fact of the matter is that the Republicans have passed a bill that basically takes care of raising the debt limit, I think about $1.4 trillion, okay? And that really kind of solves the issue. Oh, but Dr. Lou, it doesn't. Okay, now why doesn't it? Well, pretty simple. Biden wants a clean bill. Just give us a debt ceiling and move on with my budget. Well, guess what? McCarthy and the Republicans ran on trying to get control of the budget, trying to cut spending. And why do we have to cut spending? Well, because about $4 or $5 trillion that Biden injected into the economy contributed to inflation. Ah, yes, that little thing that's out there that's eating up your paycheck every 2 weeks or whenever you get paid, okay? Inflation is not the figment of the right wing, yahoos like me, No, it's real. And so the degree to which inflation has been caused by, increased government spending, which means that, you're going to have more money chasing too few goods. Let's see, how does that work? Okay, supply chain problems coming after the pandemic? Yes, okay. Well, guess what happens? Less supply at the marketplace equals, more money chasing those fewer supplies. Now, that's only one part of this, in my view at least, okay? It's true and that government spending has been one of the principal causes of inflation that most conservative economists agree is correct. But there's also another aspect of this inflation, which goes back to what Biden did on day one. We were essentially energy independent. We were the big dog in the world with energy. That's where Trump got us. And Biden ended that all because of, all of this Green New Deal, climate change, religion, and all the rest of it. Look, we've talked about this before. I'm not going to get bogged down in it, okay? But let's just say for a minute that if you're injecting lots of money into the economy and you're also cutting one of the major sources of why costs go up when energy goes up, let's see how that computes. Okay, you're the truck driver, and you've got to spend normally, $300 or $400 to fill up your tank to go take all the goods that have to be delivered. All of a sudden, you're not paying $300 or $400. You're paying $8,000, $9,000 to fill up your tank. Well, guess who's going to pay for that? You, the truck driver, aren't. It's going to be passed off to where you're delivering this thing. Okay, which means that the people who are getting the goods you're delivering are going to have to pass it off onto the consumers because they're paying more to get the goods. So, I mean, you see how this works? It's a vicious circle. And that's all due to Biden. So how does this relate back to the original point I'm making about the, you know, the debt ceiling? Well, it's pretty simple. If you're going to try to do, you know, what the Republicans set out to do, to try to control spending a little bit more. And let me just say this. I mean, all they're doing is going back to the 22 levels, which was not a real cut, okay? But nevertheless, they're at least trying to cap it at a reasonable level. But what does Biden want? No, he doesn't want anything like that. No capping. No going back to 22. Heaven forbid that they try to have a workforce, you know, regulation that if you're going to take public money, like this goes back to Clinton and what's his name? Newt Gingrich. You have to work to get your support. Well, I mean, McCarthy and them were watching Biden on TV, and there's a whole bunch of Republicans standing somewhere watching Biden say, "Yes, we'll look at workforce, you know, regulations, and you know, but nothing of consequence." And the Republicans all started laughing. This is the same Joe Biden that, when he was a senator, agreed to have, you know, workforce requirements. You've got to do something, you know, to get off your fanny to go and work while you're still getting some federal money. Well, I mean, so you get the situation here that Biden has politicized all of this. I don't think that's an unfair statement. And he refused to talk to McCarthy for 100 days. I mean, we're not making this up. It's there. And all of y'all can see it for yourself. So once again, we get back to fundamentals. Are we going to default or not? Okay? And the short answer is no, we're not. So the real question is, what sort of a deal will Biden accept? And what sort of a deal will McCarthy accept? Well, I mean, if I was McCarthy, I think I would be telling Biden, we're not going to build a $600 million new FBI office because we don't support what the FBI has been doing. And unless you start regulating them a little bit better and forcing the DOJ to have more reforms, we're not going to play ball with them. They can sit on their old building at the Hoover Building forever, as far as we're concerned. Look, there are all sorts of things that McCarthy can do, okay? And they can negotiate on this, that, and the other. But in the end, somewhere along the line, they're going to have to fix this, because otherwise, if we default, then lots of bad things happen. Interest rates will spike. You know, stock market will crash. I mean, you get the picture here, like, it's 1929 all over again. And for those of us who are on Medicare and Social Security, I mean, all of that could be fairly disastrous if we're not going to get a check, okay?
Do you really think it will come to that?
Let's hope not. But, I mean, look, I mean, right now, this is like, you know, the old, you know, car races where, see, who's going to be the chicken to turn? And I think that, you know, I don't want McCarthy to give in to this blackmail of what Trump is doing.
Biden.
Okay. And yet, if the Republicans get blamed for a default, then all that is going to do is give the Democrats just what they want. And here again, we've all said that we have got to get rid of the Democrats. And if we allow the default because we don't want to you know, cave in to Biden, then it seems to me that the worst outcome is that the Democrats get the one ticket they need to say, you're blaming all of this economic chaos on the Republicans. So from that standpoint, at least from my perspective, I would rather have McCarthy just swallow it and say, okay, we are not going to be blamed for this, but you guys are the ones that are now going to be responsible for all the overspending and things like that. We'll see how it plays out. But again, I think it's in the Republicans' best interest to play as hardball as they can, but in the end, I don't think that they're going to get a lot, and I think it's better for them to just go ahead and concede and see what happens.
Now, it's like Trump said something. Catch 22, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Well, yeah, exactly. But you know, it's just like what the Democrats have done with January 6th, okay? What did they really want out of January 6th? Pelosi knew that there was going to be a problem. She didn't do anything about getting more, you know, National Guard troops on the ground, even though offered. The Capitol Police guy was on Hannity's show the other day, and he made that point. He had actionable intelligence that he went to them and said, I need more people. They didn't want more people. They wanted what happened to happen. And they made sure it happened because they had FBI informants. And I don't know this guy, Ray Epps, but I mean, if he's an informant, an FBI informant, then that seals the deal. But even if he isn't an FBI informant, whoever he wasn't part of, you know, the Trump MAGA business, in my view. He was an individual out there urging people to go forward. And I think that sort of thing there kind of seals the deal in terms of, you know, what the Democrats really wanted. I mean, the other interesting thing, Lori, is that there was this guy who planted this pipe bomb in a place where Kamala Harris was supposed to be interviewed. Well, no one's really identified who this guy is, and there's been no real analysis of what really happened with all of that. So, I mean, look, the whole thing on January 6th was a major political benefit for the Democrats, and they have used it again and again and again. And this really comes to takes me to my next point. Okay, it's the whistleblower business that happened. Okay, so how does this all lead back to January 6th? What's the big picture here? All right, the whistleblowers are basically saying that the FBI has become weaponized against conservatives and against Republicans, okay? But especially conservatives, and especially those people who fit the category that Biden has talked about, these white nationalist MAGA Republican terrorists. I'd be one of them, I guess.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry. I mean, so at any rate, they've painted us all along these lines. Now, why are they doing that? Well, it makes sense politically, and this was at the whole point of that daggum January 6th commission doing what they did. It was a TV show. They had some ABC news guy, you know, who put it all together. It was just glitzy, blah, blah, blah. Okay. It's a political stunt, okay? To be honest with you, it's no different than what Hillary Clinton did with Russia collusion. All right, now I'll talk more about that in a second. But Russian collusion was nothing more than a dirty trick on the part of Hillary Clinton and her team to smear Trump as a Russian agent, okay? The same thing is happening to all of us little white nationalists sitting behind radios like me today, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We are smeared as domestic terrorists, and that damn Biden goes to Howard University talking to what is essentially, you know, the talented 10th within the black community, graduates from Howard University. And what does he tell them? And he doesn't just say it. He voices this opinion in a loud, passionate way. Your worst problem is white supremacist terrorists out there. You've got to be kidding me. Okay, so this is the uniter president. I mean, the BS factor is so high with him on being a uniter. Okay, fine, we all get that. But if you can't be a uniter, at least don't say stuff like this, which is really going to, quote, divide us. But that's the whole point. I mean, this is where the BLM business, Antifa and all like that, they're all part and parcel. And you say, uh-oh, Dr. Liu, you're getting into a little conspiracy here. You're damn right I am. But it's not a conspiracy when it's true. I mean, BLM wants to bring this country down. They want to institute a Marxist government. So all of you all out in Radio Land, you are fat, dumb, and happy with what you've got. You better start paying attention to what these idiots are trying to do. And what the Democrats who are serving these idiots are facilitating. Okay? I mean, they are dividing the country over on along the lines of race. And I'm going to get into this one, too, on reparations, because it all ties in. But for right now, this whole question is along these lines of what in the world is the FBI doing taking these political arguments and turning them into actual threats. Okay? Political argument number one, white supremacy is the major problem. So you have all of these white supremacist MAGA people who supposedly were insurrectionists on January 6th. Well, by God, we've got to get them. Okay, so the whistleblowers are saying things like this. Not only are they going after them, but they're using SWAT team approaches to go after people who are compliant subjects, meaning that, you know, like if it's me, they're saying that, well, you know, Dr. Liu, you were up there and we want you to come in, and we think you're one of the bad guys here. And I say to them, hey, listen, I'll turn myself in tomorrow. I'll be right there. Meanwhile, 6 o'clock in the morning, they show up with a dozen people to take me out. That's the kind of thing that you have seen on TV over and over and over again. Okay? And it's not just with white supremacists. It's with parents who challenged school board issues. You've seen that before, too. You've seen it with a parent in Pennsylvania who stopped some idiot from harassing his 12-year-old son at a Planned Parenthood, you know, a rally that the father was there and doing the kinds of things that you can do legally. But oh no, you know, it's Planned Parenthood, so they have to defend it. My point being that all of these kinds of things have been generated for political purposes, okay? You create this threat. And again, from the statistics, it is an imaginary threat. We're not talking about, you know, 30% of the country, you know, getting pitchforks and running into Washington and going after these people. We're talking about an imagined MAGA conspiracy that the FBI has chosen to move on. And here's what one of the whistleblowers said, and this was a guy named O'Boyle. Now this individual whistleblower, interesting background, Army veteran, Iraq and Afghanistan, FBI agent. What he basically is saying here is that the whole system, and his other whistleblower friend colleague by the name of Friend, they both made the point that they've created a a boogeyman, the white supremacist terrorist, and in order to facilitate that theory, the FBI started manufacturing more and more arrests to build up the statistical base that showed that there's a real problem out here. Okay? So both of these whistleblowers are moving in the same direction in terms of talking about how this manufactured crisis has been utilized in such a way as to create the statistical appearance of a real problem. Now, I don't know about you, but it seems to me... Oh, and one further thing. The way these protocols were, you know, put in place, the administrators of these programs, these anti-terrorist programs, were given bonuses if they reached certain quota numbers in their operational approaches. Now think about that. You know, what's the easiest thing for us to understand this would be? Okay? Think about the state police and how they're supposed to be operating on the highway. Well, the state police do have quotas about how many tickets they have to write. So guess what? They're going to be out there writing those tickets. And by the same token, you have this whole situation with the FBI essentially moving along the same direction. Okay? Doesn't matter how strong the case is, right? They just want those numbers. That proves what Biden and them are saying. Oh, man, those the MAGA conspiracy, and we're shutting them down. We got them. I mean, it's such BS, it's ridiculous. But that's what they're doing. So here you have these individuals. And, of course, if you watched a little bit of this, and actually you should take some time. You can find it on YouTube, or and I think I found it also again on PBS. They had taped it, okay? But some of the Democrats, I mean, all they could do was to just degrade, downgrade, you know, just launch all sorts of ad hominem attacks on these individuals. Instead of seeing them as people from inside the belly of the beast who are coming forward to say, hey, folks, you know, there's something wrong down here. And it's just really interesting. Just run the reel back to the Hoover FBI. Who are the people that dislike the FBI the most? It was the liberals, okay? All of a sudden, they're embracing, you know, the FBI as the be-all and end-all. And why is that? Because the FBI has turned political. And it's turned political in such a way as to indicate that they will crush anyone like Trump who wants to step out of the pack here and say, well, gee, we might just have a deep state here, folks. You know, it could be. So these whistleblowers are giving substance to what we have seen all along. And I would argue that, and here again, and I know I'm taking a little bit of time with this, but let's frame what the whistleblowers are saying within the context of what we know, okay? Let's go back to the Trump campaign. Let's go back to Hillary Clinton paying for the dossier and the people within the law firm that was handling it finding other people to manage this document, this smear. They didn't have to look too far because James Comey And all of those people, Sprake and Page, all of them were part and parcel of a conspiracy to first stop Trump. But like Sprake had told his lover, Page, don't worry, if he gets elected, we've got a default position. That default position was the Russia collusion. That whole hoax that hampered Trump from doing anything for the first couple of years. In the end, he was able to overcome it, not because Mueller finished his investigation that cleared him, but because Trump just went after it as fake news and drove on. Okay? So, I mean, what is so difficult to kind of wrap your head around, though, is for those of us who have, you know, kind of been through the Cold War, you know, and saw the CIA and the FBI as the good guys in all this. Now you've got the CIA Brennan involved with this. I mean, it was Brennan who told Obama, I think it's July of 2016, that the CIA had evidence of what Clinton was doing. And yet, Obama and Brennan just moved right on. So you have one aspect of the deep state, the FBI, moving against Trump. Then you have another aspect of the deep state, the CIA, the intelligence people, and Brennan and Clapper, all understanding that the dossier was just pure BS, okay? So kind of keep this in mind, okay? Put your hand out right and left and just hold on to those two pieces of information that are right there, okay? Now, let's go to January of 2017, after the election. And guess what happens? We have another meeting in the Oval Office with Biden and the inner circle. Now, put your hands together, and now we see that Comey and Biden and Obama and others now get the picture that, he won. What do we do now? And this is where the decision is made to go forward with a continuation of what? Spying on not just the campaign now, because it's over, but continuing to use the FISA court to monitor what's going on under the argument that it's Russia collusion. It never went away, even though they knew it was fake. Okay, so here you and I are sitting here. We're not in the inside of the FBI. We're not in the belly of the beast. But you don't have to be in the belly of the beast to understand what the hell was going on and why it went on and the degree to which that Comey should have been fired long before he was. Okay? And in this whole period of time, in January of 2017, look at what they did to General Flynn. Okay? They set him up, and off he went. So my point here is, sure, the whistleblowers are telling you what's going on inside, but you don't need them to tell you. You already know there's something rotten in Denmark. Okay? That's all this is. So now the real question is, what the hell are we going to do about it? And I would suggest that, you know, when you look at these folks who are the whistleblowing, the understanding of how pervasive this is takes you into a very really difficult approach in terms of, well, how do you fix it? Oh, Dr. Lou, you got it all made now. Okay, so fix it. Let's see you fix it. Well, as one of the, I think it was Mr. Friend, basically said, look, you could easily, and he made this point, I've been working with law enforcement officials at the local level for many number of years into counterterrorism, things like that. You could easily use the U.S. Marshals to deputize local officials to handle the kinds of questions that the FBI does today. Well, okay, maybe fine. I ain't no damn FBI guy, okay? But let me tell you something right now. I am going to get involved with our local FBI, talk to their PR person, and ask that the head agent to come talk at one of our meetings. I want to ask this guy, what the hell's going on here? And we'll see. I'm saying, oh, Dr. Lou, don't do that. We don't need the FBI. Yeah, we do. We need to ask these damn people, what the hell are you doing? What about the Richmond memo? Did you get that to go look at Catholics in Mobile? I want to know that. I mean, this is the BS factor here is so high. If we don't out them, then shame on us. Anyway, that's a little tangential thing. Okay, so you see the problem? How do we fix something this large and important? I mean, we really do need something like the FBI. Well, we'll leave it at that as in terms of figuring the next step out, okay? All right. And I will let, you know, here again, we will continue to, pay attention to this because we can't just have the weaponization of the political, you know, a political weaponization of the FBI. I mean, they gather intelligence. They have police, authority. I mean, it's not a nice mixture. I mean, this is how Hoover did business. He had dirt on people, okay? And he used that dirt. So we'll see where it goes. All right. How about the Durham report? Do you agree with me that that's number three, pretty important?
Okay.
All right.
I'm not real familiar with this one.
Oh, well, I will give you a quick summary
the
of it.
The Durham report.
Okay. Durham was a prosecutor, I think out of Connecticut, that Bill Barr chose during the Trump administration. Barr was the attorney general. Barr went ahead and started an investigation, okay? The first 2 years of the investigation into what was going on with the FBI, okay, led to three people being indicted and went to trial, two of whom were declared innocent in Washington, D.C. of any wrongdoing, okay? And here again, It's the same problem that we've talked about with these New York juries, okay? Trump's not going to get a fair trial there, okay? Mm-hmm. And for Durham to prosecute people in a Democrat city like this, forget about it. But one of the three people did plead guilty to let me get the phrasing right. Okay. He manipulated an email and changed it so that the report that went to the Pfizer judges looked different than what it should have been.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is no small matter. He got community service. Okay, he should be in jail.
Uh-huh.
Comey should be in jail. McCabe, Strzok, all of them should be in jail. Okay, that's the issue. Now, so what Durham did in the first 2 years was conduct that investigation, okay, on the immediate questions pertaining to FBI involvement with the whole business with Russia collusion. The last 4 years have been an investigation into how the FBI conducted itself doing the investigation. Okay?
Okay.
And this is where the left says, well, this is a nothing burger. And people on our side say, this just proves everything I just said, Laurie, about what happened with Comey and all the rest of those people. This Durham report solidifies that, makes it factual, shows how off the rails they were. Okay? And so the argument at this point is, how do we fix the FBI? Again, sort of what I just said a little while. Fit that into what the whistleblowers are talking about, and then superimpose on that the Durham report of major malfeasance at the top of the FBI that hopefully has not seeped into the lower ranks, but we don't know that, okay? Which leads us right back to, how do you fix something that you really can't tell how deep this is, or can you trust it if you just, you know, take the top layers off and find capable people to put on top? Are they really going to respond to being what the motto says, integrity, you know, courage, all that sort of thing? I don't know. I think a lot of people just say, just shut it all down, start over. I don't know.
None of that will happen in the current administration.
Well, of course not. Okay. But if you get Trump and DeSantis goes for 8 years and you get Trump for four, in theory, you might have a chance of cleaning it up. That's in theory. So, I mean, the Durham report, to my way of thinking, really creates a major victory for Trump, because it really does make it possible for people to see just how involved the FBI was and the degree to which it was just a hoax to begin with. It was fake news, which is what Trump has always claimed, okay? All right. I want to talk about this one. And we've mentioned this before, and I want to get to it again. Squad member, okay? What squad member? What does that mean? Well, it means that, if you remember, a few years ago, AOC came to power. She got elected, and she put together a squad. AOC, Alexandria Ocasio, you know, Cortez.
Okay.
All right. AOC. All right. A name to remember. Hopefully a name to forget sooner rather than later. Okay, so here you have AOC and several of her friends who were ideologically committed, socialists, the whole nine yards, one of whom was Cori Bush, okay? So Cori Bush this week came out with a reparations bill. Now, this bill's going nowhere, okay? I mean, just like in California, where Gavin Newsom decided that the reparations bill that his committee came up with was just a little bit too expensive to take care of. So he's kind of treading water on that one, claiming that, you know, we have to see, all right?
Okay.
So, but Cori Bush, oh, man, I mean, she's damn the torpedoes full speed ahead. $14 trillion in reparations. Oh, yeah.
$14 trillion,
all right? So, and she says this is necessary for the reckoning of all of the crimes against blacks and all the rest of it that's taken place in America, starting from the first
slavery.
1619.
Okay,
back to 1619. Okay, so let's just take a look at this for a second, all right? A reckoning. One could argue, as some have, that a reckoning took place during the Civil War, the reckoning over slavery, in which over 600,000 whites died, in part to rid the country of slavery. I say in part because I've never accepted the proposition that the Civil War was only about slavery, okay? There are other issues out there that have been part and parcel of what came out of 1787 and the constitutional impact of states' rights and things like that, okay? But nevertheless, the reckoning has already been taken care of, okay? So let's start there. Let's start also with the whole idea of the Civil Rights Movement and the degree to which the Civil Rights Movement culminated in, I would argue, and here again, this is the the white boy with the glasses half full rather than glasses half empty theory. But as I've said to you all before, we've had these discussions, the civil rights movement created a certain movement towards rectifying the problems of the past. Was it perfect? No. But one can argue, as I have, you had a political and social revolution created by Dr. King. So, and I'm not going to repeat all this again. I mean, we've gone through it. To me, it's a given, okay? And that given is manifested politically by all these black mayors of big cities in the country, which are all deteriorating mighty damn fast, okay? But nevertheless, blacks are in charge, so there's kind of one of those things that you have to, you know, accept as a political reality, good, bad, or indifferent. How about all of these interracial marriages? I mean, I've mentioned on this show last year when George Williams, I think, was on with me, Black History Month, 30% of marriages today are interracial. Somewhere along the line, these blacks and whites are kind of fearing that we love each other or whatever. So how does that factor into this BS about white supremacy and white nationalism, hating everybody and blah, blah, blah? You know? So, I mean, we're back to kind of fundamentals here. So if you don't accept the proposition that nothing has changed since 1964 and 65 with the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act, then I guess you're going to be on the side of reparations. Except lots of blacks who have been very successful in this country are saying, not only no, but hell no. Carter Woodson, you know, talked about it the other day. You know, and again, the Woodson Institute has been one of the foremost important places to go to for black history interpretation of what happened and blah, blah, blah. And he said he rejects this whole idea of reparations. Okay? And his argument basically is the problems today in the black family have nothing to do with white racism as much as they have to do with the attempts to try to fix poverty. Ooh, guess what this takes you back to, which I know I've talked about with you all. Go to back to 1965, where Daniel Patrick Moynihan was an advisor to, you know, Lyndon Johnson when the Great War on Poverty started. And he made the point to Johnson that all that you're doing is destroying the black family because it was now, the illegitimacy rate was at 25%, and the black family was being destroyed because rules and regulations pushed black fathers out of the household. You want to get the money, you got pregnant, you want the baby, can't have a father there. Okay, so the incentive was to have children. Out of wedlock, get money. That's 65. 1965. Today, 70% of black children are born out of wedlock. So what does that mean? Well, it means a whole lot. For Woodson, who blames crime and all the rest of it on single parent raising of children in poverty. Okay, so the bottom line here is the reparations movement, well, it sounds like it can do something. It's not going anywhere in Congress. Her bill will just die. But it's virtue signaling and all the rest of it. But I've also talked to you before about just exactly how do you figure out who's going to be eligible for this? You know? And then who should pay for it? How about the free blacks who had slaves in Charleston and New Orleans? Free blacks had slaves. So we're going to trace those folks back down and figure out how much of their share should be thrown into the reparations pot? How about the African chieftains who sold their people into slavery? How about the Arab traders Muslim Arab traders who took the slaves from the chiefs to the coast to where they sold them to the slavers who took them into eventually the colonies. How do we find this out? Okay. So if they're going to stick this bill just to the Americans who had slaves, you can forget it. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to die on its own accord. But for them to even think about doing this, in my view, is just absolutely ridiculous. All right, how about this next news item? Flash, flash, the border is secure. Oh, Dr. Lou, I didn't realize that. God. Oh, yes. I'm glad I got a laugh out of Lori with
yes,
that one.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I'm going to just be a comedian from now on. Okay, flash, flash, the border's not secure. Hey, Mayorkas, what you thinking, babe? The border, and we've cut down on the number of illegal crossings. Oh, my God. Okay. All right, so here we get this business. And again, you have to ask yourself, what is the purpose of this? And I think that there are two strands of thought here that we need to kind of keep in mind, big picture, okay? One strand of thought emanates from the Democratic Party that has seen that this whole immigration business as part and parcel of how they can gain complete control of the electorate by just amnesty being applied to all of these illegals. The theory being these illegals will be beholding to the Democratic Party. And so they will be rewarding Democrats who run for office. Therefore, you get the picture, okay? That's one aspect of this. There's a more sinister, I mean, that's bad enough, okay? I mean, for the Democrats to inflict the kind of pain that's happening right now on our country for political gain as such, that's outrageous. That's what it is. But the more sinister aspect of this is, and it kind of goes back to what I said a little while ago about the FBI manufacturing a crisis over white nationalism. Well, what about this? Now you've got crises after crises that are happening. Places like Nuevo Yorko. Now, Mayor Adams, black mayor, former police guy, you know, didn't get too excited about the crime rates being spiked. Oh, no. He could deal with that. But what he can't deal with is 60,000 or so illegal immigrants coming to his city. But guess what? Dr. Lou, isn't New York a sanctuary city? Oh, my goodness. You radio folks are just on the spot today. You are just driving it home. Adams has 60,000 people. He can't deal with the crisis. So he's actually getting mad at who? Old Uncle Joe down in D.C. Now, isn't this interesting? But this is the sinister part of this, okay? Notice how what he's saying. We can't deal with the flow. It's overwhelming our social services. We're failing. We can't handle it. Okay? Go back to Cloward and Piven. How did they maintain we could bring down this country, overwhelm the services, create chaos? What happens with chaos? Mayor Adams, it's chaos, isn't it? Who do you want to help to take care of this chaos? You want just more money from the feds? Are you willing to give up something in return for feds helping you? How far is Adams going to go to lift this burden off of New York City? Is it just Adams? No, it's Washington, D.C. It's Chicago. It's everywhere. It's the border towns that have thousands of people that they can't do. Now, think about this for a second. According to the feds, all of these children that are coming across, what are they eligible for? School.
Medicaid?
Yeah, well, I mean, here we are. How are we going to school these people? How? I mean, what happens if they show up in Baldwin County? We're already having trouble assimilating Spanish-speaking kids in our school system. And it is an issue in terms of the scoring. I mean, I think I've mentioned before that Baldwin County has one school where they disaggregated the statistics. They took out the Spanish-speaking kids who score low. They can't speak English. It's a problem. Okay. And instead of the state board figuring out how to accommodate scoring and testing for this subgroup, okay, they don't. So Baldwin County, you know, has low scores, due in large measure, one could argue, to what's happening with, you know, the failure to be able to deal with the scores, you know, given by this subgroup. So they disaggregated it, and I think I've mentioned it to you. Once you take out those low-scoring 35 or 40 kids, the rest of the school, the rest of that class goes up to about 90%. Not bad, okay? All right. But I mean, we're talking about thousands of kids coming to these schools. What does that do to the school system? It creates chaos, okay? And the argument basically is, create enough chaos and you're going to have the solution come back with the feds.
From the government. From the government.
All right, so now, Lori, I'm looking at this. I've got 3 minutes to go.
A minute and a half.
Oh, my. I'm looking at that. Okay. All right, folks. I'll go with her time. All right, so let me just wrap this up though, real quick, though. We had a really good meeting with the Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth on Tuesday, okay? So this is news, all right? So I'm giving real news, all right? And in that discussion, we mentioned that the logic of what Governor Ivey did by firing the pre-K Dr. Cooper because of woke materials being used in pre-K, what's the logical conclusion? Well, if it's used in pre-K, don't you think it, if it's being used there, it's going to be used in K through 12? Yes, yes, yes. So why not get rid of it in K through 12? He was very receptive to this argument. He basically said to us, you don't have to convince me, okay? And so the argument put before him was, can we start seeing you work to get the governor to not only move against woke, but against Common Core, which is the predicate for all the woke stuff going on? So we're hoping that this is the first time that there's been ever even a sense that something positive might come about as a result of what Ivy did on the pre-K side. We'll see.
Okay. We being the Common Sense Campaign representatives.
We being Alabama Conservative Coalition.
Okay.
I'm representing Common Sense.
Okay.
But that's the we.
Well,
I mean, we've
you.
Been fighting this crap all these years. And so, and I think Ainsworth wants to be governor. And I think that, you know, our argument to him was that this would be, you know, something very beneficial to you. And he basically said, look, I'm not looking for credit, and that's fine. That's admirable. What we're looking for are the results to start moving against this stuff. And Ivy can do it. She can do it with an executive order just like, you know, DeSantis did. We left, you know, information just like, you know, all of the information that DeSantis had, those documents, we gave that to the Lieutenant Governor, and we'll see where it goes. But I do think that it was an important meeting to have, And I think that we're a little bit more optimistic about seeing something positive come out of that.
Very good.
So here it is. Now, it's Lori's time now, so we'll wrap it up. Now, as usual, I did not get to finish all of the things that I wanted to talk about, so I guess I'll have to carry some of them over for next week. But be that as it may, you all have a great week. Oh, gosh, I really wanted to talk about... Never mind.
Well, about what?
Next. Well, it's about this bill that Chris Elliott has to try to make the county commission have
another commissioner.
Another commissioner.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So it would be a fifth commissioner. Conceptually, five would be good. But mandating that fifth one to be the chair, I'm sorry, we can't support it, and I will talk more about it next week.
Interesting.
Thank you so much. All right, y'all take care. Be good.
Thank you.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Liu of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with the state-of-the-art car wash, and by an anonymous sponsor. If you missed part of the program, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com.